I see that it's now 3 minutes past the hour, and so I suggest that we begin. Good morning, everybody. My name is Mary Wong. I'm a member of the ICANN policy staff. I'm here with a few of my colleagues, and I'd like to welcome you to today's webinar on the Who is Ms. Yu study by Nectaris Leontiadis and Nicholas Christian, who have been our researchers on this project for a while. My colleague Natalie Peregrine is the one who's running the lines. Natalie, do you have some preliminary comments for our participants?
Thank you, Mary. This is Natalie. Just to remind everybody that there is audio streaming only in the Adobe Connect room. So if you wish to ask a question over the audio during the question and answer session, please don't hesitate to dial into the audio bridge. The passcode is WHOIS. If you have any issues during the call, don't hesitate to type on private chat to me, and I'll be happy to help. Back to you, Mary.
Thank you, Natalie. And for those of you who have not been to our webinars before, welcome. For those who you've been before, you will know the drill usually. So we will spend maybe the first 40 minutes with our presenters, who will take us through the study, the hypotheses, the methodologies they used, and the findings, as well as some of the analysis they've come up with. There will be a question and answer session at the end, at which point your mics will be unmuted and you can feel free to ask your questions. If at any time during the presentation you wish for clarification, please feel free to type that in the chat as well. We'll be monitoring that. So with that, welcome again. And I'd like to begin by reminding us of how we got here. And you may remember that several years ago, the GNSO Council resolved to obtain some objective and quantifiable data on various important aspects of the WHOIS system. And as a result, some studies were commissioned as well as surveys, and you see them listed here, so I will not go through all of them. All the reports are out either for public comment or the studies have been completed already. And so this particular study on WHOIS misuse will complete the project that the GNSO began a few years ago on various projects on WHOIS. We have a link there, and the slides will be available after the seminar today so that you can explore the studies and the work that's been done to date. For this particular project on WHOIS misuse, we've been very fortunate to have SciLab from Carnegie Mellon University join us to perform this study. This is some of the credentials of SciLab. I think many of you will know of their work. And, of course, they've done many more studies and have many more publications and research grants compared to this. The leader that we have with us today is Dr. Christian, who is an assistant research professor at SciLab and from CMU's Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering. I've included the link here so that you can check out his bio as well as his multiple publications and awards. And he is assisted in this project by Nectaris Leontiadis, who I believe will be presenting their findings to us today. So welcome, Nicholas. Welcome, Nectaris. And over to you.
Thank you, Mary. This is Nectaris. In this webinar, we will be presenting the main methodological aspects and key results of the study conducted here at CMU. In the response to ICANN's decision to pursue a set of five WHOIS studies, as Mary mentioned, characterizing the use and misuse of several aspects of the WHOIS service. The empirical findings of those studies intend to inform further decisions at ICANN in terms of the future of WHOIS. Now, the present study tries to empirically verify the hypothesis that public access to domain register information through WHOIS leads to a measurable degree of misuse. Furthermore, if this hypothesis is validated, this study aims at identifying the main forms and characteristics of WHOIS misuse and the effectiveness of anti-harvesting mechanisms in protecting register information. The scope within which the study tries to answer those questions are defined by the terms of reference for WHOIS studies. More specifically, we look at the top five generic top-level domains that in 2011 represented about 98% of the total registered domains. The same scope also applies to the other four WHOIS studies that ICANN has commissioned. Methodologically, this work is divided into two main components. The first component is a descriptive study that uses a set of interviews and surveys to capture the details of past instances of WHOIS misuse. All surveys were done independently by CMU with explicit assurances of response privacy and anonymity. The second component, the experimental study, tries to measure empirically and systematically the occurrence of WHOIS misuse and ideally corroborate the findings with the ones from the descriptive study. I will start with a discussion of the various components of the descriptive study and the associated key results, and then I will continue with the experimental part. As part of the descriptive study, we constructed three questionnaires targeting three key groups. The intent was to capture different but complementary perspectives on the occurrence of WHOIS misuse. The first survey targeted registrars, asking them in what ways, if any, the information listed in WHOIS has been misused in the past. More importantly, we sought to find whether they could attribute this misuse to their information being listed in the WHOIS. The second survey targeted registrars and registries, maintaining the zone files of the five top-level domains, with the intent to get aggregate data on the occurrence of WHOIS misuse and to identify the methods they use to protect their registrants' information. The third component was an expert survey targeting cybercrime researchers, law enforcement, and consumer and data protection organizations, aiming at getting a more holistic perspective on online crime in general, and more specifically, on the occurrence and significance of WHOIS misuse. Now, starting with the registrant survey, we built a representative registrant sample based on a set of 6,000 randomly selected domains from the five top-level domains, which we then reduced into a microcosm of 2,900 domains, having the same TLD distribution as the population of domains in those five top-level domains. Given the desired statistical significance, we set the response target to 340 registrants. But despite our repeated and intense attempts to reach this goal, we managed to collect 57 responses, which brings the margin of error up to 12.7%. While this is not as bad as may seem initially, as our intention is not to show that WHOIS misuse is beyond a certain rate, but rather to ascertain whether the misuse occurs at a statistically significant level. And that's exactly what we discovered. Based on the collected reports, WHOIS misuse occurs at a statistically significant level. Almost 44% of the registrants participating in our survey were affected by one or more types of WHOIS attributed misuse. That is misuse that the registrants could directly associate with the exposure of their personal information in the WHOIS. The participants reported three main types of misuse: postal address, email address, and phone number misuse. The first two, represented by postal and email spam, are the most prominent ones, with about 30% of the participants reportedly being affected. Phone number misuse follows, with about 12% of the participants being affected. Other types of reported harmful acts either occurred at a very small scale, like blackmail, or the registrant could not associate the harmful act with WHOIS misuse. Now I will move on to the second survey, targeting registrars and registries. The registrars we considered for participation in the survey were the 107 registrars associated with the domains in the registrant sample. We also included the four registries responsible for the five generic top-level domains within the scope of the study. Overall, we got 22 responses from registrars and a single response from a registry. Moreover, the registrars and registries participating in the survey opted to leave many questions in the survey unanswered. In this survey, we did not make any claims of statistical significance, but the responses do represent the views of 22 of the 107 most popular registrars and of one generic top-level domain registry. Now, moving on to the findings of the survey, registrars and registries reported email spam as the most prominently reported incident of WHOIS attributed misuse. That is followed by phishing attempts, postal spam, malicious software sent via email, attempts for identity theft, and various forms of blackmail. Six participants reported being able to verify that the reported incidents were caused by WHOIS misuse. While these results are based on the reports received at the registrars and registries, it is important to know how often they directly observe efforts of WHOIS harvesting and what they do about it. 30% of the participants reportedly observed attempts of WHOIS harvesting, but no participant stated that any such attempt was successful. Also, 57% reportedly implemented one or more WHOIS anti-harvesting methods. The methods implemented include IP blacklisting, query rate limiting on port 43, which is the designated WHOIS querying port, CAPTCHA challenges, and private or proxy registration services. I need to stress out once again that a big chunk of the participants did not offer any answer to this set of questions, so these findings are more indicative of the current situation rather than representative. Before moving on to the third survey, I will talk briefly about a small experiment that we used to test the registrars and registries for the existence of WHOIS anti-harvesting techniques. We found that about 51%, the majority of registrars and registries, do not employ any port 43 rate limiting technique. And the remaining portion uses a variety of methodologies similar to the ones reported in the survey. Now, moving on to the expert survey, we build upon our contacts here at CMU and on ICANN's contacts to assemble a panel of security researchers and consumer and government organizations with specialties that would involve awareness of specific incidents of WHOIS misuse. As I mentioned earlier, the goal for this survey was to get a holistic perspective on online crime in general, and more specifically on the occurrence and significance of WHOIS misuse. In total, we recruited 101 participants, mainly security researchers and law enforcement agents. Moreover, while we invited participants from all geographic regions, we mainly have representation from the Americas and Europe. Overall, they shared details on 23 incidents of WHOIS misuse, with almost half of them targeting directly the participants. Most cases involved spam email with marketing material or bills, but we also had a few reports or more sophisticated attacks. In about half of the reported cases, the victims did not take any protective measures after the attack, while the other half reportedly attempted to avoid further misuse by deploying specific countermeasures like IP blocking. In terms of the portion of the WHOIS information being misused, The email address has reportedly the highest occurrence with 17% of the cases, followed by the register name and postal address in 26% of the cases. Finally, the phone number was misused in 17% of the cases. And now we are going to move on to the experimental part of the study, and I will start by discussing the overall methodology. The goal of the experimental study was to measure empirically and systematically the occurrence of WHIS misuse. To this end, we registered 400 domains across the five top-level domains using a representative sample of registrars. Each of those domains was associated with an artificial registrar identity. And the domains were crafted in such a way as to be categorized in one of five categories of interest. Over a period of 6 months, we used this experimental platform to measure the occurrence of WHIS misuse as it was reflected by the number of email spam, postal mail spam, and voice spam collected as voicemail. In selecting the registrars we'd use to register the experimental domains, we started with the 107 registrars associated with the domains in the registrar sample, and we picked 16 based on a set of criteria we set. A key criterion was the popularity of the registrar, as it was reflected through the representative registrant sample. In total, we registered 25 domains per registrar, which essentially means 5 domains per each of the 5 top-level domains. Each of those domains was selected from one of the 5 domain categories. These categories are the following. Strings of completely random letters and numbers, strings representing person names in the form of first name dash last name, synthetic names composed by concatenating 2 random words from the English vocabulary, names representing businesses in 10 professional categories, often abused through phishing by online criminals, and finally, names from 4 professional categories that are not known to be targeted. Now, moving on to the artificial registrant identities, as our audience would probably know, a registrant identity is composed by the registrant's full name or organization, phone number, and postal and email addresses. So, each one of the 400 registrant identities had all those pieces of information. We constructed the registrant names by piecing together random combinations of first and last names. Also, each identity had one public email address and a set of private email addresses. The public one was published only through WHIS, and it was in the form of contact at domainname.tld. The set of private email addresses was not listed anywhere. In terms of postal addresses, we reused across all identities the addresses of 3 PO boxes located in the U.S. Our initial intention was to use a set of geographically diverse postal addresses, different for each registrant identity, but we encountered numerous difficulties in this effort, and you may find more details on that in the report. In regards to phone numbers, we acquired 80 Skype numbers for the duration of the experiment, and all incoming calls were sent directly to voicemail. I should mention that each phone number was reused between the experimental domains registered at the same registrar and under the same top-level domain. Now, having discussed the experimental methodology, I'm going to move on to the key findings of this experiment, and I will start with the case of who is attributed email misuse. 95% of all the emails we collected at the public email addresses was classified as spam and was directed to 71% of the experimental domains. I need to stress that our methodology allows us to say with high certainty that all of this measured misuse is attributed to WHOIS. Now, moving on to the occurrence of WHOIS attributed phone number misuse, we collected in total, and I apologize for the overlap here in the figure, we collected in total 674 voicemails, and 39 of those were classified with high certainty as WHOIS attributed spam. The Skype accounts receiving those calls were associated with 30% of the registered domains, experimental domains, primarily under the .biz, .info, and .com top-level domains, followed by .net and .org. It's noteworthy that we faced a few challenges in classifying the voicemails. For example, it's not uncommon that any one of us may get an unsolicited phone call, only to realize that, in fact, the other party called our number by accident. This means that we could not rely on any automated classification system, but we had to manually classify each and every piece of voicemail. Now, the third and final part of misuse we identified targeted the registrant's postal addresses. In total, we collected 4 pieces of WHOIS attributed postal spam and 34 pieces of postal spam that was not associated with WHOIS misuse. While this extent of postal address misuse does not allow for any meaningful statistical analysis, the mere occurrence of WHOIS attributed postal spam suggests that registrants' postal addresses are in fact targeted and misused. Now, correlating the findings of the experimental study with the ones we reported in the descriptive study, we find that through both routes, we identify the same major types of WHOIS misuse. These are email address, postal address, and phone number misuse. In comparing the rates of misuse, only in the case of the phone number misuse, there is a match between the measured and the reported rates. In the case of postal address misuse, we measured a much lower rate, and we believe that this may be caused by the limitation I mentioned earlier. Finally, the lower frequency of reported email address misuse can be ascribed to the difficulty the registrants may have in classifying email spam as WHOIS attributed, as most of us receive significant loads of spam email, and the modern spam filters do a good job in keeping it out of our sight. We further performed a statistical analysis to identify significant correlations between the measured misuse and the characteristics of the experimental domains. We considered the following possibly contributing characteristics: the existence of WHOIS under harvesting measures, the top-level domain, the price we paid to get each of the experimental domains, the category of the domain name, and the registrars we used. In terms of the observed phone number misuse, we found that the only factor that had a statistically significant contribution was that of the top-level domain. We found that .biz and .info domains were subject to more WHOIS attributed misuse, while .org domains were subject to less misuse. Considering now the observed email address misuse attributed to WHOIS, we found a number of statistically significant correlations. First, the lack of WHIS anti-harvesting measures is linked to 2.3 times more misuse. Furthermore, looking at the top-level domain, we found that .biz domains are again subject to more misuse, while .com, .net, and .org domains see fewer WHIS-attributed spam emails. Moreover, higher-priced domains are correlated with less misuse, and the same applies for domain names denoting a person name. And as you may see in this table, we did not find any evidence to support a correlation between any type of WHIS misuse and the registrars. Now, before moving to Q&A, I will briefly summarize the findings of this study. So we found statistical evidence through a combination of a descriptive and an experimental study that public access to WHIS leads to a measurable degree of misuse. About 44% of the registrars participating in our survey have directly experienced WHIS misuse, which most prominently affects their email addresses, postal addresses, and phone numbers. Finally, the evidence suggests that WHIS anti-harvesting is capable of reducing WHIS attributed spam email, which is the type of misuse with the highest frequency. And with that, I have concluded the presentation of the key findings of this WHIS study, and I'll be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you very much, Nectarios, for that very comprehensive overview of the work that was done and the two studies or the two aspects of the studies. For everyone, here are some links to the public comment forum as well as where you can download the draft study report, and I would encourage you to take a look at the full report to get a fuller sense of what the research team did. At this point, Natalie, can we unmute the mics for everybody who's dialed in? And as Nectarios said, please feel free to either type a question into the chat, raise your hand in the Adobe Connect room, or speak away on the phone bridge. I see that Jim Prendergast is typing in the Adobe Connect. So, Jim, if you have a question?
No.
And I'll read out Jim's questions for those who are on the phone but not in the Adobe Connect chat room. And his question is how the results of this will be used in conjunction with the EWG work in this space. I can take a first initial, very preliminary crack at that, and I might ask Lisa Pfeiffer, who is also working with us on the EWG, to supplement what I might have to say. At the moment, Jim, it's not something that's clear or been decided because the study results have just been published. But as you may know and as others may know, this is work that is being closely monitored by the GNSO Council. And at the GNSO level, there is a new working group that's just been formed to deal with somewhat related but not entirely identical aspect of WHIS. And the reason I raise that's on privacy and proxy accreditation and services, is that particular working group is working with the EWG to align some of the goals and some of the findings that are being sought by the EWG. So my expectation, speaking from the staff perspective, is that the GNSO and the council will certainly consider these findings very, very seriously and coordinate with the EWG to the extent that there are either overlaps or complementary aspects that either warrant further study or that we could use in redeveloping and refining WHIS into the new data directory service. I'm sure that's not the detail that you were expecting, but Lisa, do you have anything to add to that?
Mary, I think you captured it. I guess the one thing that I would add is that the expert working group is trying to really cast a wide net and obtain as much data as we can from as many sources as we can, this just being one of those sources. The place where I would expect the results of this study might apply would be in looking at the data elements that are being proposed and the level of risk associated with each data element based on both the results of this study as well as the results of other studies.
Thank you, Lisa. And I noticed that there are a couple of similar questions, including from Rudy, regarding the translation or transliteration of contact data. And again, that is a project that's underway in the GNSO. And so, Rudy, I suppose I would give the same response and assure everyone that the Council and the GNSO community will be following up and monitoring as appropriate. There are two questions that I think are specific to the study that I will ask Nicholas and Nikarios to take if they can. The first is from Avery, and the question is whether follow-up study. Well, actually, we can take the first question, the follow-up studies. And Avery, hopefully, the earlier response that Lisa and I gave answers that to some extent. But the specific question that you had are, first, what can we make of the disparity of the report in terms of experimental postal abuse? And secondly, how can one test for other aspects such as harassment or blackmail? Nicholas and Ekterios, do you have responses for Avery on those questions?
Sure. In terms of studying harassment or blackmail, the design of this of the experimental study involved the creation of artificial registrant identities, which were not existent before, so we cannot see whether these identities were used in ways that we were not expecting, and also we were also concerned with the observed rates of misuse through the major paths like email address, postal address, and so on, and therefore it's not easy to monitor other types of use of these identities. And I believe Nicholas wants to say something here.
Yeah, let me just complement this by saying that if you want to measure something like blackmail or harassment, these are activities that typically take place over a very long period of time, and it's I would say it's very difficult to do this over a study that spans only 6 months or so. For this, you would need a very longitudinal study over several years. I think that the other question was about the disparity in experimental postal abuse. As was mentioned during the talk, the results that we got between the survey and the empirical study, we do believe that the empirical study here may have been a bit of a lower bound because we were operationally limited to using a handful of PO boxes in the U.S. The reason for this is that there are very strict identity checks in most countries, and you cannot open a PO box very easily without an actual proof of identity. And so this limited us a little bit in the experimental study.
Thank you, Nicholas and Nikterios. And Avery, I note your thanks as well. There is another question from Marcus, and the question relates to, I suppose, an impression that the basis for the statistical analysis may seem quite small. And the question specifically is whether the number of people and organizations that responded is sufficiently large to draw any conclusion. So, Nicterios, Nicholas, would you like to respond to that?
Sure, yes. In terms, in terms of the registrant survey, while we did not get the expected turnaround, we we merely adjusted the error rate of the findings. So the sample was representative of the population of the registrants, but we don't have the desired precision that we intended to have initially. Now, in terms of the other surveys, as I said during the presentation, they don't represent statistically significant findings, but they rather give us an idea of the status quo, and they're more indicative or more suggestive than, rather than representative.
Thank you. And Marcus, if you have a follow-up, please feel free to type that as well. I see that, Avi, you had a couple of follow-ups, and the first was a question, and it related to whether any content was actually put on a website. I believe you mean during or as part of the study, so that there would be something to blackmail the registrants about. I believe that that would not have been within the scope of the study because we were looking really at the misuse of the data. Nectarius, do you have a response to that?
That is correct. We did not put any content we did not associate any content with the registrant domains, and we were just looking at who is attributed misuse. And you're exactly right, Mary.
Thank you very much. We still have a little bit of time, so please feel free to ask questions, either as follow-ups to other questions that were asked or that relate to questions that have yet to be asked. And while you take a moment to think and perhaps to type, I'll go back to Rudy's comments earlier on in the chat, which were a follow-up, I believe, of an earlier question as to the translation and transliteration of contact data, not specifically relating to the use of the report in the GNSO working group on the issue, but specifically, Rudy, you had a follow-up question as to whether translation, the transliteration of WHOIS contact data, that is, if the WHOIS contact data were translated into a different language or transliterated into a different script other than the Latin script or English, as the case may be, would that increase the misuse? That wasn't studied as part of this particular experiment or survey, but Nectarios, Nicholas, I wonder if you had a comment about that?
We did not look at this aspect. The registrant identities that we used or created were all using Latin characters, so we don't have any observation in concern to this question. But it is an interesting follow-up.
Thank you. So hopefully, Rudy, that answered your question as well. And while you're thinking about possible final questions to ask of our researchers and presenters before signing off for today, I'll just remind everybody that the recording, the transcript of this particular webinar, as well as the slides, will be posted on the GNSO website following the second webinar today, which will take place at 1900 UTC. And thank you, Rudy, for the follow-up. Thank you, Marcus and Avery and Jim, for your comments and follow-up as well. It seems that there are no further questions at this time. And so once again, we have the same presentation and webinar will be conducted later today at 1900 UTC. And we will post the recording, the transcript, as well as the slides as soon as we can. Thank you all for signing up and for joining in. We hope that you have found this presentation to be helpful. As we've noted here, there are public comment forums that are open. There's one specific to this particular study. The initial public comment period will end in at the end of December, and there will be a reply comment period that goes through the 18th of January. So once again, we encourage you all and your groups and communities to take a look at the report and to please submit any feedback, comments, and suggestions during the public comment forum through the link you see here on the first bullet point. They will be extremely welcome, and they will be very useful to the GNSO as it considers follow-up steps somewhat related to the questions that were asked today. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Nectarios. Thank you, Nicholas. And you can end the recording at this point. Thank you.
Thank you all.